This week on the Vergecast, Dieter, something happened to his Galaxy Fold. We're going to talk about it. And Apple settled with Qualcomm. And there's a little bit of PS5. This on the Vergecast.
Support for the podcast comes from Canva. Presenting to a group of your colleagues can be nerve-wracking. So why not ease some of that anxiety with Canva? Thanks to their AI, you can start with a simple prompt and watch Canva go to work. Choose your favorite style, customize the content, and that's it. You're done. It's a serious time saver. Whatever you do for work, Canva presentations can give you a head start on your deck. You generate sales presentations, marketing decks, HR onboarding plans, you name it. Finish your deck faster. Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Hello, and welcome to the Vergecast, the flagship podcast of the Verge ecosystem. You know, people just send me emails. I get cold pitches from PR people now that are like, hey, man, been listening to the flagship. It's good. That's good. We really put that out in the world. Anyway, I'm Neli, your friend. Dieter Bohn is in the studio with me.
In New York City.
He's in New York. And yeah. What an adventure you have had in this city, my friend.
Time.
Paul Miller is here.
Hello.
All right. There's like all this stuff to plug. Just listen to last week's episode, the top of it. Get all the links. Get all the plugs. Like there's something happening in this world.
Yeah.
And it's the Galaxy Fold being broken.
Yeah.
So let me just set it up and then I'm going to take it away because this has been his emotional experience. It's the Samsung Galaxy Fold. As you know, if you've been listening to the Vergecast, we are all very excited about folding phones because they're neat.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
There's no practical excitement here.
We actually had to make a big long like argument, especially on Twitter and like elsewhere, to get people to stop for just a minute and think about how they're neat before they jump right into like, but what will go wrong?
Yeah.
Just like sit with the neatness for a minute.
Yeah. It's neat. They're cool. It's like a little piece of the future, folding screens. Do you want a taco? We made a whole chart of all the names you could give them.
Yeah.
We had fun with folding screens. And then Dieter got one.
Yeah.
The Samsung Galaxy Fold, which a reminder cost $1,980.
Yep. Did a hands-on.
Did a hands-on.
Played around with it.
We were like found in a hotel in New York.
Yep. Hotel in New York. Found myself more impressed than I expected to be. Intrigued. I thought the hinge felt sturdy. Everything was like better than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Maybe not $1,980 better, but like better than I expected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then what happened?
Then nothing.
No raging controversy. Yeah.
Okay, so here's the timeline. Hands on Monday, got a review unit. Very excited. No embargo at all, so we can just do whatever we want. But I decide not to like spend my day tweeting about it. I was going to spend my day using it and letting it get photos and working with whatever.
Cramming debris in the hinge with a toothpick.
Tuesday night, like I don't know, 7 o'clock or something. I look at it and there's like a bump on the crease towards the bottom of the phone, like a little bump. And I'm like, what is this? And I like, it feels like there's something hard underneath it. I think, is it hard? Do I really want to push on it super hard to see if it feels like it's hard or if it's soft? I don't know. So I immediately like war text everybody at Samsung, just like, yo, something is weird here.
Yeah.
Finally, get somebody on the phone. We do a duo video chat, which is very exciting because I don't get to duo chat many people because everybody has iPhones and they don't use it. Show the crease. I'm like, okay, well, we're going to get it replaced tomorrow. I'm going to want a statement on this. Come in Wednesday morning. I write a whole article. I'm like, I'm going to write a whole article. I got it done at like, you know, midnight, Tuesday night. And then I just sat on it because I'm going to wait for Samsung to give me a statement.
Yeah.
It's a responsible thing to do. I have no idea what caused this thing.
Can I add just one addendum?
Yeah.
in classic Dieter fashion, there was a lot of you blaming yourself.
Oh, yes.
That occurred in my direction. So I'm getting texts. Dieter's like, we must have done something.
Yeah.
An entire theory was created.
Yeah.
What? Dieter yelled at me at one point because I was like,
it's just a lump in the crease, right?
A lump in the crease.
That's all that's happened so far. And you're already doubting your life.
What could have happened? Because I didn't have the phone the entire time. Other people had it. And like it, you know, could it have like gotten some piece of like mounting clay have gotten in it? Could like sand gotten in it? Did someone drop it? And I didn't know. Like a whole, like we just start knocking down these theories left and right. Like there's no way, there's no way, there's no way. And like, I don't know. Did part of the hinge break? It's my current theory is that part of the hinge broke at some point.
Yeah. But we don't know.
But we don't know.
So at one point I say to Dieter, we don't know. We don't have to take the blame because we don't know.
Right.
We will happily take the blame once we do. And Dieter got mad at me because he so believed that he had broken the phone. Anyway, so
we're waiting The next morning comes. I open up the phone. It sat overnight. I did nothing. I was very careful not to push too hard on the bump, all the stuff. I'm not going to pop it like a zit.
Yeah.
Which is
gross.
Gross.
Wow.
But would have played huge on Instagram.
It was like one of those, it's like deep in the skin and like, you know what I mean? You know it's coming, like but it's going to take like a week to show up.
Yeah.
come into the office, like, all right, I need better photos and we should probably shoot a video just in case, even though I don't want to put it until we have the review, blah, 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 blah. Open the phone up to show people the bump. And there are the lines that you get when there's a crack in a screen.
Yeah.
Just like there's a horizontal line and then a vertical line grows and like, yep, the screen is now officially broken.
Mm-hmm.
So I war text Samsung again. They're like on their way to deliver me a replacement. They deliver the replacement. I have taken a bunch of photos.
There's a second bump though.
There's another bump that has appeared underneath the first bump in the same way that if you have growth.
Can we stop doing this? Whatever it is, stop it.
Screen is broken, second bump, very bad. I no longer have the phone. I believe it has been sent to Korea for diagnosis. Yeah, it was
driven straight to the airport.
I offered to cut it open with an X-Acto knife to look at it. I was told not to do that, and I chose to abide by that. You do sign like an agreement that you won't try and like intentionally destroy these phones when you get a review unit. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then I'm sitting on the story. We rewrote the story. And then I see on Twitter, Steve Kovac's phone was busted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Steve
Kovac works for CNBC.
He works for CNBC. His review unit was busted. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to publish. So I told Samsung, I can't wait for the statement anymore. It's been hours. Publish the story. And then like the internet has already begun to explode because other journalists have had their phones like ruined. Mark Gurman at Bloomberg and Marques Brownlee.
Yeah.
Joanna Stern at the Wall Street Journal has a slight problem with hers, although it hasn't exploded into a full-blown disaster for her yet.
Yeah.
Can you rewind just a little bit in the emotional journey?
Yeah.
The moment that you found out that you weren't the only one, how did that feel?
It was very exciting. I had actually been planning on, like, if I didn't hear an answer, just, like, quietly texting a bunch of reviewers and finding out if I was the only one. But then Twitter took care of that problem for me.
Yeah, the backfire of the no embargo is when your $2,000 folding phone breaks, everyone can just say it at once in real time.
Yeah. People were accusing us of, like, being in cahoots. There are a bunch of people on Twitter like, Samsung must have known it was broken, and so they made you all sign an embargo that you wouldn't write about it until the exact same time. Because if you were on Twitter at around, like, what was, like, 2 o'clock Eastern yesterday, you just happened to follow a bunch of tech journalists, like, within 5 minutes, it went from nobody was talking about the Fold to it was the only thing that existed in the world.
Well, so importantly, and I think this is the key point for me.
Yeah.
These phones broke. I don't actually know what happened in Joanna's, but these phones broke in at least three different ways.
I count two.
Okay.
What are your three?
So there's yours.
Well, I count definitely two, possibly three.
Right. And right. I told you not to take the blame for it, but it's your fault.
Great.
You created some sort of psychokinetic disturbance and raised a bump.
Look, man, I grew up a Lutheran. It's original sin.
So there, you had the bump, the bulge.
The bulge.
Yep. So that's one way it broke.
The bulge. Yep.
At CNBC, Steve Kovac, it's just flickered out. So like the one side of the screen doesn't work.
It looks like pretty bad.
It looks, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think Marques and Mark Gurman.
Yep.
They did a thing which, I mean, it's a user error, but it's totally understandable.
I will tell you that I almost did the exact same thing.
So everybody knows me, but I'm assuming people who listen to the Vergecast have purchased a new phone recently in their lives. You buy a new phone, it's got a plastic cover on the screen. First thing you do is you peel that off.
Yep.
It's just the normal thing that you do. Some models of the Fold, apparently like the T-Mobile version, has a little sticker that's like, this plastic film on the screen should not be removed.
Yep.
The one you got did not have that sticker.
That's correct. I got a unlocked European version.
Well, everyone knows Europeans, just they don't take any plastic films off their phones.
Samsung never told me that it was like a sample or a prototype or anything. They're now calling them sample units, which I find little retconny.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Anyway, so Mark Gurman and Marques Brownlee went to peel off what is called a screen protector.
It's like a protective polymer film.
Yeah, but like it doesn't imply that removing it will destroy the phone,
yeah.
Which it's is like, the thing it's like that happened.
It's like human skin is an organ protector.
Yeah. Yeah, we are deep in the dermatology game today. My sister's a dermatologist. She's going to be horrified. Your skin is your largest organ. Anyway, she tells me this all the time. I hope you're all hydrating. but yeah, so this thing that looks like either the shipping film that you get on a phone or is called a screen protector is actually not.
Yeah.
It appears to be a key part of the screen
so,
that when you remove it, the screen breaks.
One of the things that you probably don't think about when you're thinking about a phone like this is the screen, you know, it's flexible. And so it has a different like physical structure to it than you're used to. When you get a phone these days, it's a beautiful, seamless, glossy slab and the glass melts perfectly into the metal rail and blah, 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 blah. The Galaxy Fold is not that thing.
No.
It has a plastic rail that runs around the edge of the device that sort of like holds the screen down underneath it. So it's not a bezel. There's a plastic rail over the screen. And the best metaphor I've been able to come up with is like, it's like the metal thing that holds a piece of carpet down before you get to the tile or the hardwood. Mm-hmm. The technical term is a carpet threshold, by the way. Ooh. I had to look this up. Mm. And so there's that. And then within that, there is the extra layer of plastic that doesn't – there's like a tiny little gap there. So it looks like a screen protector within that thing. And so it looks like a screen protector. But there's like – there's extra layers of like how does this screen work than we're used to. And I have a theory. I don't know if it's true. But my theory is like this thing could – they could have shipped this thing without that. But because, you know, it's a delicate piece of OLED film stuff – they wanted a little bit more protection for it because if you ding this extra layer, they could theoretically like, you know, squirt some Goo Gone on it, take it off without damaging the screen, replace it. Or maybe there'd be like a service option or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you'd rather get a little ding or a nick in a, like a protective layer of film on top of the screen than, you know, the quote unquote screen itself.
Yeah.
Is my theory. I don't know.
I mean, it's a good theory.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's rooted in you blaming yourself.
Well, there should have been like the box should have had a little like pop-up book diorama that when you open it, it's like, don't touch this thing.
Well, I think they made a huge mistake in calling it a screen protector or making it look like a screen protector or not telling you it is clearly an integral part of the screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
it's just it's another layer that's glued on there with special flexible adhesive, but It looks like a screen protector. It's part of the screen, even though it's technically like just another thing that's glued on top of it.
And
they should have had it run underneath the carpet threshold.
Yeah.
The bezel. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I take your point. Like if you scratch it, maybe you want to replace it. Maybe, I don't know, every T-Mobile store is going to have a special little oven, you know, and like that's how you peel it off. But it's like very clear that peeling it off damages the screen.
Yeah.
Because there's at least two reports from excellent tech reviewers.
The third report from Joanna was she tweeted a picture of like the corner of her screen where she had started to lift it off. It started peeling off. Did she do it?
No, she said it started peeling off.
Oh, God.
So I mean, depending on how you look at it, there's like between two and three different ways this thing broke. And so yours broke spontaneously. Steve Kovacs at CNBC broke spontaneously. Mm-hmm. These other ones are pretty excusable user errors in the sense that
completely.
This thing looks like a thing that you can remove on every other phone in the world, and they were not instructed such. Mm-hmm. And then Joanna's, which is peeling.
Yeah,
That's a lot for a $2,000 phone that's supposed to be a showcase of a new technology.
It's a lot for any phone. Like some of the feedback I got is quit saying that this is unacceptable on a $2,000 phone, because it's unacceptable on any phone.
Yeah, but if it was like $20, you'd be like, yeah, this thing's a piece of crap.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But this is like this is their flagship thing for the year is the Fold. They need to show it off.
Yeah.
And they blew it. Yeah. Like the first question we had is, it's supposed to ship next week. Mm-hmm. Are they going to ship it?
Yes.
They
finally gave us a statement saying we're still planning on shipping it. After their other statement, which we should get into.
I mean, it seems like we will know very quickly if the model they ship is of exact same quality and information design as the first one, or as the review unit, because in 1 or 2 days, like a million people will break this.
A T-Mobile executive tweeted the box and was like, no, look, like here's the retail model on ours says don't remove this.
Yeah, John Ledger's running around the warehouse, slipping stickers on all the boxes. but that doesn't account for how yours broke.
Nope, right. Does not.
And it certainly doesn't account for how it appears Steve's broke or how it appears Joanna broke, which is they spontaneously like broke.
And this is like 1 or 2 days,
yeah.
Which is it's almost a best case scenario for something that fails. Like you know, Apple. The problem with Apple keyboards is that it will be 3 months in, and all of a sudden you don't have a space bar anymore. Here you quickly realize the error of your ways.
Yeah, the error of your spending $2,000.
Well, we will know within 1 or 2 days if Samsung is the shipping model is the exact same quality control as Dieter's.
Is these quote unquote? There is a lot of retconning going on here. First of all, calling them sample units is like hilarious because it's shipping in a week. Mm-hmm. So if you're still like putting out sample units,
you could just
wait one more week and put out real ones. That's a choice you can make. Then. There's the retconning of calling it a screen protector or whatever, like when it's clearly a part of the phone, right? Like those are two things where I think Samsung played some word games to get around what actually is happening here, which is fair. I mean, they're
a
big company. They got PR people. That's what they're paid to do. The thing that
– I think it just didn't occur to them that people would try and peel that thing off because they've been living with it for however long they've been living with it.
Yeah.
And it just – they're like, oh, wait.
Yeah, everyone in the world tries to peel this off.
Yeah, just like, but they've been like people inside Samsung have had this thing for you know, they say they've been working on it 8 years, so they've been messing around with this basic idea for I don't know minimum 6 months if not longer, right?
So let's talk about how yours specifically broke because that's when you had.
Yeah.
So your theory again, the one
I have.
Dieter got mad at me for saying he shouldn't just accept as the truth because we don't know.
We do not.
Is that. So when we review phones and you look at all the cool shots of us reviewing phones, phones are like floating in midair.
Yep.
It turns out we are not able to just levitate a phone. That's
Although we have done high speed shots and then like reverse them where we like just drop the phone on a pillow and so it looks like it's like flying slowly through the air.
Yeah.
But that's not
some real TV magic happening with the video team.
By the way, I don't know if the podcast is going up before or after the review, which I'm planning on publishing on Friday.
Yeah. It'll go up after.
It'll go up after. Make sure you watch the review because the cool TV effect shot that we've done is real practical effects and is within the top five or like top three or maybe the best like effect we've ever done with a camera.
It's very cool.
It is unbelievable.
It's very cool. Anyway, to make this magic, go watch the video, pull over in your car, watch this video, come back. The way you make these things happen is you got to hold up the phones. So like virtually every phone, we use a little bit of mounting clay, which is just like Play-Doh. And we stick it on the back of the phone, we stick it to something, and the phone magically is levitating in midair.
Yeah.
So Dieter just like is convinced.
Initially,
that somehow the clay is sticking through the screen.
So when you bend the Fold, there's like a tiny little gap on the front between the screen and like the gap in there. And then there's also a tiny little gap on the back of the phone on the hinge where like the two book covers like come together. But like we don't think it got in on the front. So like could it have somehow like gotten in those tiny gaps in the back and then like literally worked its way through the gears? I included a GIF of Charlie Chaplin going through the gears in Modern Times. And then to get under the screen.
Let me just tell you what it's like to get a series of texts like this at 11:45 p.m.
I mean, I was very...
Let's just assume this is true.
I was very troubled. No, I was rattled.
Let's just assume this is true.
It was the rattle of the bulge.
Assume this is true. This is a horrible outcome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it means that if you have this thing in your pocket and there's dust or lint or you went to the beach,
yep.
Anything smaller than a lump of clay can work its way into the phone and destroy the screen.
Not good.
I honestly do not think this, especially after you see all these other ones, right?
Yeah. I don't think that's it either. If it was, it's still terrible.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was it.
But I'm just saying, anything smaller than a lump of clay can work its way into this hinge and destroy the screen is a bad outcome.
Yes.
We don't think that's what happened anymore. Dieter, now you think the hinge itself just like spontaneously destroyed itself.
I did press on the bulge and it did feel like not soft. It didn't feel like clay. It felt hard.
Clay notably soft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then a second one appeared. So like some debris.
Yeah. Ant colony.
But debris is one of those words that like starts to look weird the third time you write it out, you know? Because I didn't want to say sand. I didn't want to say dust. I didn't want to say grit. I didn't want to.
Something.
Mm-hmm. Something.
Yeah.
And like the generic word for a little thing is debris. Anyway, something's in there. So maybe like someone opened or I opened the thing too hard, or maybe there was just a failure in the thing and like one of those tiny, you know, millions of cogs that they have in there like just got a little crack and then that piece worked its way up Charlie Chaplin style under the screen. No idea.
That's bad too,
because it's also bad.
That, opening it too fast will destroy the phone.
Yes.
I know we haven't dissected it yet, again, because of that agreement.
But and we may never get to know because
there's
Samsung
no chance we will ever know what this was.
Yeah.
But which means I can torment Dieter by saying it was his fault forever.
Damn it.
But do we know what is under that crease to begin with?
Nope. But I Samsung has posted some like cool like Microsoft style look at all the gears stuff. And I haven't gone through and looked at every second of footage that they've posted, but I don't think we know what precisely is sitting directly under the screen if you were to like just rip the screen off. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
This is gonna be a great iFixit. I'm really
looking right? Well, Jerry rig everything, like they didn't give him one. He's like, he's actually sad. He's like, oh man, the one time I don't get the phone, it breaks on its own. I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah. Okay, so the phone is broken. We've established the phone is broken.
And the world blew up.
And now you have a new one.
Yep. Well, no, Samsung gave a statement. We should read some of the statement.
Yeah.
So a limited number of early Galaxy Fold samples were provided to media for review. Fine. Received a few reports regarding the main display. We will thoroughly inspect these units in person to determine the cause of the matter.
I love that.
Yeah.
They're not going to have robots inspect them.
I have a slightly different statement apparently given to a Korean outlet in Korean, and I don't trust Google Translate enough to actually like translate it, but they're looking into it.
Yeah.
And then they get into the separate thing about the main display features a top protective layer. Not a screen, a top protective layer, which is part of the display structure. Notably, removing the protective layer or adding adhesives to the main display may cause damage. I don't think Samsung wants people to like go buy a screen protector and put it on this thing.
Yeah.
Especially those like fancy screen protectors where you got to like take a blow dryer to it and heat it up and all that stuff. Mm. I think if you put anything on this display, it's you're going to be putting pressure on a bend that is like right at the limit of what it's able to do. Even though they can bend it and unbend it, 200,000 times.
Yeah.
I think that even though we have to sign these agreements saying we're not going to intentionally damage, review units, I think it is like time for us to make it official Verge policy that when we receive any device, we're going to put it in a bag of Doritos and shake it. we're going to pour Doritos on keyboards. We're going to put
Look, Max is going to be at Play-Doh age soon. We'll just see if we can work some clay into your phone. That's just what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So separately from all of this... You also got to review the phone.
Yeah.
What do you think? Besides the fact that it's broken.
It is.
That's like very hard to separate the fact that all of them broke within a day from the thing. But you were kind of high on the thing.
I'm actually reviewing this phone. Of course, we're talking about the breakage, but the bulk of my review is going to be reviewing it as if it didn't have this catastrophic critical problem that should prevent you from buying it. Mm-hmm. As if it didn't. And in that world, before I knew this thing was going to break, this was my conclusion. This is my conclusion. Andrew, I'm going to start. And before I knew it was going to break, this was my conclusion. I have never used a phone, a especially a premium phone, with this many problems that I've loved this much.
There's the one problem. And then we added one more problem to that list.
Yeah.
Can you clarify that statement? Are you saying that the pre didn't have a lot of problems or that you love it more than the pre?
Ooh. Ooh.
Okay. Maybe I should say it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, it's been a long time.
Because the pre had a lot of problems.
Yeah. It's been a long time. Yeah.
The unfinished operating system being one of them.
The protective layer. I'm sorry. What do they call it? Protective layer.
Yeah.
Picks up dings like nobody's business. The one that I got had like a dimple in it right out of the box, and it's got dings on it that just magically appear. Don't know how. Android on tablets. Guess what? Just guess. I bet you have a guess. It's not great.
Yeah.
It's good.
This year though. This year.
It's gonna happen this year.
Wait, did you have like a moment where you're sitting down and you're using the tiny little screen and like, psh, I wish I had this on a tablet. And then you're like, oh, I do. I could. And you swag it open and the app jumbo sized. And like, did you have the moment?
No, sort of.
I played with the Interzone for 5 seconds and I had that.
Yeah, no, I had that moment, but I never had the moment where I was like using the tiny screen because the tiny scene is so patently ridiculous from the jump that you never try.
The tiny screen is definitely not big enough to do anything on.
I've got lots of highfalutin ideas why I like this thing. When you're sitting in a meeting and there's a bunch of people at the conference table and you pull out your phone and start doing stuff on it, you're the asshole.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You're like, what are you doing? You pull out the Fold, though, you've got a tablet. You might be checking the Google Doc for the meeting notes. You might be like doing something important.
The ideal form factor is the one that makes it look like you're paying attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reading Kindle books on this thing is great.
Yeah.
It feels like it's the exact size of like a regular old Kindle, but you can also turn it sideways and get two columns of text if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Video's fine. Like the screen is actually like pretty bright and color accuracy is good. It just, you know, has dings and a crease.
And also breaks.
Oh yeah.
We
haven't even talked about the crease.
Yeah.
Multitasking, like Samsung has this weird like three panel system. It's janky as hell. If you have three app windows open or two app windows open and then you close it and then you open it again, all of your windows just disappear.
Yeah.
They don't know how to save state. You know, there's just like jank and weirdness. But when you just like use it as like a basic Android phone, but it's just big, it's like a little tiny tablet. It's about the same screen size as an iPad mini. It's a little bit smaller, but you don't get the iPad mini's bezels. You're like, oh, this is amazing. And the other highfalutin idea I have about it, and this is definitely going in the review, is you pull your phone out and you intend to like look at that notification. And then all of a sudden, 45 minutes have disappeared because you're on Instagram and you're on this or you're on that. You've got these, like, these phones are designed to, like, fill those downtime moments. They're, like, these in-between moments when you, like, just want to look at a thing for a second. And then that second turns into an hour.
Yeah.
You can't do that with the Fold because the tiny screen is so bad and so tiny and so impossible to type on and so impossible to do anything on that you, like, will do one thing and be done. Like, mm-hmm. I literally, the only things I have on that tiny screen are Google Maps, Spotify, and Hold Down. And then I can use it on the subway, and that's it. When you open it up, you're using it. Like, you're doing a thing. You can't, like, casually, like, without really paying that much attention, just happen to accidentally have your phone in your hand for 45 minutes. It's, like, a thing you have to mean, right? And so it, like, it exists on either side of like what makes phones so like addictive, but it doesn't exist in that middle. And there's lots of problems with that because like you can't hold it in one hand and like, you know, it's too thick and it's too heavy and blah, 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 blah. But there's something really compelling about a device that forces you to either mean it or not use it at all.
Yeah. Or that just breaks in a day. So you can't use it at all. Like, how do you solve self-addiction?
Wouldn't it be cool if I, like, didn't have to? If I could, like, say these things and you could actually think about it and go, the only problem is it's $2,000.
I have thought about this. Yeah. Now, this is a classic scenario of a status symbol. Very expensive and very obvious that you have it, right? Mm-hmm. I always had this theory that the original Beats headphones, the original Beats wireless headphones had horrible battery life.
Yeah.
And they stopped doing any audio once they ran out of battery. So I assumed when I would see someone on the street wearing Beats headphones, there was a 50-50 chance that they're out of battery and they were just wearing Beats headphones to be seen. So I could imagine a scenario where somebody's at a coffee shop or at a conference or whatever, and they're standing in the corner. They have to be in the corner so nobody can see whether or not their screen is broken, and they're out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
That's how I feel about AirPods now. No, really? You see the AirPods people, and I'm just like, whatever you're listening to sounds bad. Oh, I know it in my heart, and you know it in your head, and that's where
we're in your ears.
I don't think they're dead, though. I think AirPods have decent battery life. But, all right, the crease. We got to just wrap up. Can you see it? Do you feel it? Does it bother you?
You can see it. You can feel it. It should bother you.
You can feel
the
it?
Screen, yeah, you could feel it.
Oh, yeah.
The screen temperature is slightly different on either side of it.
Oh,
there's another huge problem we got to get into.
Oh, no, I know.
Separate from the crease. When you're looking at it dead on and you're just, like, using it, you accept it. And, like, you don't, like, see it. It doesn't, like, viscerally hit you in the face.
Yeah.
So it's basically comparable to a notch, but it's like a little bit more severe because like it's definitely a crease. But it does like become a little bit like you become blind to it in the same way that, I don't know, like you don't see the spine on a book. I don't know. Like what's it like if you have like a dot in the middle of your vision, like literally on your eyeball or like your glasses are scratched, eventually your brain like sees around it, right? It's kind of like that.
The crease.
Yeah. The notch is more annoying because none of the video apps have any sort of way to pinch out to like get rid of the notch in the video. And so the only way to not have your video be notched off in the corner is to change the entire phone to notchless setting. And then you lose that entire top bar of the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the notch is a ridge. Like you're talking about the ridge over the whole thing. There's like a little plastic.
The carpet protector?
The carpet threshold. Carpet rail. So like there's that ridge and then the notch has a little plastic.
Yeah.
It's all very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but that's not the thing. I know the thing you're about to talk about.
So I'm gonna back into this.
Okay.
When you have a smartphone screen, there has to be a thing that like tells the pixels what to do, right? The controller, whatever. What is it called? The controller.
The controller.
Sure. Turns out that controller is usually on the top or the bottom of your screen for a very good reason, because it takes a millisecond longer for it to hit the opposite side of the screen than where it's at for the pixels to do what they're supposed to do. So when you scroll, if you look very, very carefully, especially at like, you know, low-end phones or certain OLED phones or whatever, you can actually see the thing you're scrolling kind of compress or expand depending on where it is on the screen. If you really look, especially if it's like a black square on white, you will see it.
Hmm.
Now, the Fold can't have a controller on the top or the bottom of the screen because it folds horizontally. So they put the controller on the right-hand side of the screen. So when you scroll, the right-hand side of the screen is slightly more reactive and faster than the left-hand side of the screen because it takes a second, you know, a millisecond for the refresh rate to go across the screen. You don't see it. You don't think about it. You don't notice it. And then someone points it out to you. And then you're like, do I see it? Do I see it? And then you never unsee it.
I can see it on my XS right now.
Yeah. Are you holding it horizontally?
You sure am.
Yeah. And you can see a little bit of wave. You know, we call it like, what's the word we use?
Like rolling shutter?
Jelly. It's a little bit of jelly. Jelly scrolling. Mm. And so like, because it's such a big screen and maybe the refresh rate is not as fast as it ought to be on, you know, this flexible panel or whatever, the jelly scroll is like pretty pronounced.
When you scroll, the whole display goes like diagonal.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. And you don't see it at first, but once you see it, you like see it. And if you shoot it with a high speed camera, the kind that like causes those like black bands to go across the screen, those black bands are actually the screen refreshing.
Yeah.
And you can see it like stepping down across those black bands. Like you see literally the refresh happening.
This is a lot of compromises in this phone.
This is way too many compromises in this phone.
But it sounds like you like it conceptually. I mean, my biggest worry, let's say they got all the technical kinks out and it just works wonderfully, right?
Uh-huh.
My biggest concern is that this seems too big to put in my pocket.
It is too big to put in your pocket.
So it doesn't feel like a phone anymore.
I have never had a phone with this many problems that I liked this much. Like this many problems should make you just want to throw this thing away, but you don't want to because it's like a beautiful little iPad mini that you can stick in your pocket. Except it runs Android.
So you just said you don't put it in your pocket.
Well, you can like put it kind of in your back pocket.
Like
you can,
cargo
you can
shorts.
Put it in your pocket. Yeah.
Yeah, you need cargo shorts. That's actually the biggest compromise of all is that it comes with a pair of cargo shorts that can't be removed and that destroys the phone.
I mean, bring back holsters.
No. No. We got to wrap this up. Dieter's like getting cargo shorts in a holster to use his broken folding phone. Where we should, so there's many more folding phones coming out. We've seen like three of them. Motorola is going to do some like weird vertical razor thing. They all use the same core underlying technology, these plastic folding OLED screens.
Yep.
I think the question is whether they're all going to have the same problems.
Or similar problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's really what we're learning. Like maybe this is a Samsung problem and they just forgot to engineer a hinge to block out items smaller than a lump of clay. And they didn't do the screen. Like maybe these are all Samsung execution problems. And when Huawei puts out the Mate 10, whatever it is, it's not going to have them, even though that screen's on the outside and that seems like density. Maybe Motorola is not, or maybe this is like inherent to these plastic OLED screens. And I think we just don't know, but that's the thing we're about to discover. Samsung also put out a phone that literally exploded. Like, it's hard to know where the blame lies now.
The exploding phone came in a landscape of primarily non-exploding phones. What is so disconcerting about this is that this is our first experience with a folding phone, and I want it to work out. I don't want anybody to feel burned by it. Like, yeah. I want that person to spend $2,000 on the phone because they're going to look really cool. Right?
Yep.
And get marginal utility out of it, but not be mad when it breaks. And so I want everybody to be happy so that 5 years from now, when I buy the super thin, affordable, great folding phone, you know, it's all been worked out.
Well, I will say the narrative of this phone is all but set.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a mainstream product. You're not going to put it out. And then everybody, remember the iPad came out? Everyone made jokes about the name. And then like 20 minutes later, millions of people have iPads and the jokes went away because like the culture had just taken the thing away.
Yeah.
Like that's not going to happen to this thing. Like 10 people are going to buy this product. And all anybody else is going to know is that the screen broke within a day of like all the reviewers having it.
Yeah.
It's going to take them some generations to get to the place where, right. But the first thing anyone is going to do with a folding phone now is, I don't know, throw clay at it until it breaks. Right.
But you don't get more generations if this is a completely losing proposition.
We got another generation of the Note. They brought that back from explosions.
Right. Yeah, they didn't even really mention it. They were like, not to worry. This time we've tested for explosions.
I think the risk of releasing another Note was mitigated by the fact that there had been other Notes that didn't explode.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think that this bumpy rollout is gonna stop them from iterating and refining folding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like everyone seems committed to it, so we'll see. All right. But we'll see. All right, we got to take a break. Then we got to talk about Apple and Qualcomm because that is just surprises for days. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Canva. They say Rome wasn't built in a day, but you know what you can get built in a day? Your creative deck. You can generate creative decks to use for all your important presentations with Canva. Thanks to their AI, you can start with a simple prompt and watch Canva go to work. You want a sales presentation for a tech company? Done. Create an employee onboarding plan? No problem. Just type it in and watch Canva work its magic. You'll have generated options in seconds. Choose your favorite style, customize the content, and you're done. It's a serious time saver at work. So whatever you do at your job, Canva presentations can give you a head start on your deck. You can generate sales presentations, marketing decks, HR onboarding plans, you name it. It's AI for every department. It's easy to learn. It's even easier to use. And because it's built in Canva presentations, you can stay focused on the task at hand with no app switching. Finish your deck faster. Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Okay, we're talking about Apple and Qualcomm, and they settled their lawsuit. I'm teeing you up, Neelai. Yeah. You just want to jump into it.
I'm like raring to go.
We were expecting. You remember the Samsung Apple trial? We got discovery, which meant that executives had to go on stand and speak on the record, and internal documents from the companies got released in court records, and we found out all this exciting dirt about the birth of Android and how pissed off Steve Jobs was at Eric Schmidt, and like all this really juicy, exciting stuff. And this lawsuit between Apple and Qualcomm, we've talked about it before. It's been a while, but it boils down to Qualcomm has 1 million patents, and they want phone makers to pay them a percentage of the cost of their device, not just a flat rate for like licensing their patents and getting their chips. And Apple thinks that that is highway robbery, and they're very pissed off about it. That's like the core of it. And they have been escalating their rhetoric to a high level of vitriol. And Apple had started putting Intel chips in its Intel modems in its phones. And so we were like, these people did not look like they were willing to like negotiate or settle.
They hate each other.
And it went to trial. And we're like, here we go. Yeehaw.
Yeah. Documents.
Yeah.
Tim Cook on the stand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're like, we're ready for it. And mm-hmm. then after the first day, they announced they settled. And then like 45 minutes later, Intel announced that it was no longer making 5G modem chips. We're done with that. So that's like a wild ride. Yeah. I will say the first day of this trial, the opening arguments were legitimately just like comedy level, because you know, patent licensing, modem chips, they're complicated.
Yeah.
So Apple's lawyers tried to do this like earthy, you know, like, folks, let me explain to you what's going on here, right? To the jury, because they think the jury is dumb.
Did they have a hip analogy?
Oh, no. Let me just read this to you. This is like a Kentucky Fried Chicken that refuses to sell a bucket of chicken to customers. First, you have to go to a different counter, KFL, Kentucky Fried Licensing, and you have to go pay the eating license fee before they'll sell you any chicken. That's what they went with.
I'm already lost.
That's what they went with. Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Kentucky like Fried
all
licensing.
Of the things that you can buy.
I want to know, when they were preparing this opening argument, how many other fast food restaurants they went through before they landed on KFC
as
being
the
thing they think would work.
No.
Like, you need a bucket of patents, and so you need a bucket of chicken?
No. That would have been better. No. They just went with KFC. Because Qualcomm's entire model is they get you to pay twice.
Yeah.
Right.
Right, and Apple hates paying twice. So if you want to buy... In any other scenario, so I'm going to do it too. Oh, God.
Here we go. Yeah, if you go to Hardee's, what's the burger at Hardee's called?
I hate this so much. No, but think about your actual phone.
Yeah.
You purchase a phone. Mm-hmm. Your phone is full of parts.
Yep.
Those parts are encumbered by thousands of patents. Mm-hmm. You don't have to buy a patent license to buy your phone and use it.
Right.
Right? So, like, I bought a phone. Dieter received a Galaxy Fold.
Yeah.
Samsung, he broke it very quickly on purpose.
It broke.
With great intention.
I didn't break it. It broke.
Samsung's not making Dieter pay a patent license fee to get the Fold. I don't have to pay a patent license fee to use my laptop, right? Mm. To get a Qualcomm modem, the Foxconn, Pegatron, those companies are required to also take a license to Qualcomm's patents. So you pay a patent licensing fee, and that's the only way Qualcomm will get you to buy the chip. There's like a million different ways that Qualcomm would spin this as like being totally reasonable. Apple thinks this is the worst. Foxconn thought this is the worst. Mm-hmm. I feel like that is not so hard to explain because I just explained it.
It's a lot easier to explain than the KFC analogy.
And what we went to instead, and I'm just going to read this again. It's like a Kentucky Fried Chicken that refuses to sell a bucket of chicken. First, you have to go to KFL, Kentucky Fried Licensing, which is, it doesn't exist. Like, you're asking this jury to invent another counter in a KFL. Anyway, so that happened.
Uh-huh.
Like, so wait, one theory
wait,
is that.
Wait, one second. what you're really doing is you're going to KFC, you're buying a bucket of chicken, but to be allowed to buy a bucket of chicken, you also have to buy a license
yes.
to the recipe to the chicken.
Yeah.
Although you are not allowed to use that license, that recipe, to make your own chicken.
Potentially.
So you have to, you yes. have to, I mean, we,
I'm not sure how this particular KFC operates. How have operates? We not
brought seven herbs and spices into this metaphor?
I've changed
the
my
license
mind,
is the clearly KFC for the seven herbs perfect. And spices.
So but another
isn't
good
Qualcomm's
analogy,
argument that they also have, like, they also control, like, if you make a bucket, that they also make the bucket? I don't know. Never mind.
Again.
Because they're, like, their patents aren't just for the thing inside their chip. It's for, like, a whole host of other things.
I feel like I'm getting older by the second. Like I'm dying.
What about the mashed potatoes?
It's all bad.
What's a bowl that has like all of the foods all at the same time?
Meanwhile, yeah. Intel can't even figure out how to make coleslaw.
Yeah. And so it's bad. So like, Intel's like, what is this? Is this chicken? Like, we don't know. We've never been able to identify a chicken.
Okay. On
it's
a serious
Kentucky Fried Pigeon.
Yeah. On a serious note, is the fact that nobody can make the chips that Qualcomm makes because Qualcomm has the patents?
Okay, so this is like a deeply complicated secondary layer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The 5G is a standard, right? So mm-hmm. a bunch of – you invent the stuff, you give the – so the way you like – from a classical sort of economic sense, the way you create incentives to buy into the standard is – or to develop against a standard is Qualcomm does a bunch of forward investing. They do all the R&D work to invent the technologies for 5G. They go to the standards group, whoever else, Huawei's there, Ericsson's there, so on and so forth. They say, okay, here's a bunch of technology we've invented. We're going to put our patents into the standard pool and anybody can make stuff that uses or interoperates with the standard. And we will promise that we will license this out for fair, reasonable, non-discriminatory rates. FRAND. You might remember FRAND mm-hmm. from the Apple and Samsung trial,
yeah.
right? Where Apple had all their patents and trade dress and trademarks and blah, blah, blah on iPhone stuff, and Samsung had a billion patents on Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and FRAND stuff. And mm-hmm. Apple – literally, Tim Cook said to me at a code conference when I said, why is this trial still going? He said, we just want to make the FRAND system better. And like the code conference audience laughed at him because who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. Like that is the most ridiculous like nobility. It was a waste. At the end of the day, Samsung paid some money. They took it all the way to Supreme Court. They took it all the way down. And you know what? Everybody's still making phones. Samsung, their phones do break after a day. Just put it out there. But
one
right,
of
like,
their phones.
It's one of their phones. The other phone exploded.
There are.
0 for 2.
It's like
basically
it's
libel.
Like, it's like
it's not.
It's too
libeling. It's two flagship
stop
phones.
Stop libeling Samsung.
They've put out like 20 flagship phones.
Oh, okay. Fine. Anyhow, the point of this is that trial was obviously a waste, right?
Mm.
Like they did all this stuff, and at the end of the day, someone paid some money. Whatever. No FRAND issues were truly resolved. In this case, Qualcomm's big set of patents. Some of them are. FRAND. Some of them have to be licensed out as part of the standard, fair, reasonable, mm-hmm. non-discriminatory. Some of them don't. But Qualcomm just makes you sign a blanket license when you want their modems. So mm-hmm. that's what Apple's objecting to. It's like, this is extortionate. This isn't fair, reasonable, non-discriminatory, blah, blah, blah. Intel, though, has access to the standard. Huawei has access to the standard. Samsung makes a bunch of stuff, has access to the standard. So you could
Long as they pay Qualcomm.
No, as long as they pay into the standard pool,
yeah.
license the full set of 5G patents,
can
and take them back out.
Can we actually like? I think that the way I see this, and wait. I think actually the way I'm going to zoom out from the legal argument yeah. just for half a second, mm-hmm. is from like the like legal how should the FRAND system work perspective, from like the moral perspective. Like, I think Apple probably has a little bit of high ground here. But it seems obvious that from a leverage perspective, from a power perspective, Qualcomm had Apple over a barrel.
So I think what happened here, with LTE, they were able to go to the Intel chips, right? And Qualcomm mm-hmm. spent a bunch of money and they owned a bunch of LTE patents. And if you look around the industry, there's Qualcomm modems everywhere, right? And great. Apple went to Intel, said, make us these LTE modems. It took them a couple generations. this last set of phones, exclusively Intel modems. People generally think they're not as good as Qualcomm modems. Mm-hmm. In the grand scheme of whether you're using iOS or Android, that's not enough to sway a purchase. But the Qualcomm modems generally perform faster on LTE. It's just a thing that the industry kind of knows. Then you get to 5G and Intel just doesn't get it right. They just don't have it. Like Qualcomm first demonstrated their like millimeter wave 5G modem like a year and a half ago. Like super wonky trade so stuff, right? Like here's a booth. It's a white box. There's a chip. There's like a LED display that says like 200 down.
Yeah.
Like no one – like this is stuff where we see it at CES. We see it at MWC. It's not even worth writing about. Qualcomm demonstrates a modem. I assure you four people care, right? So this stuff is happening in the background. Intel is not demonstrating those modems. They don't have it. In the meantime, it is very clear that Apple's like hiring modem engineers in San Diego, which is where Qualcomm is located. So from a leverage perspective, it seems very obvious that Intel just is not going to get it. They're not going to get there. Apple's going to make their own modem in the end. But they can't do it in time for them to put out a 5G iPhone in 2020 or 2021 or however long it's going to take. So I think they eventually just realized they had to cave. My question, and I think people saw this coming a long way away. Qualcomm was ahead in terms of the technology, in terms of shipping the chips. There are 5G phones, right? Like in the world right now, they're a little bit silly in the sense that the most available one is a Moto mod for the back of a Motorola Z3 that you can use really in like 1 square foot of Chicago.
LG just delayed its 5G phone, and there's a really good quote. We're going to concentrate on the completeness of the phone.
So
it's really zen, actually.
We're very early in the ramp, but if you want to ship the phone when the networks are ready, when the technology is ready, when you can put it in a small package, you need the chips now. You need to start the development now. Mm-hmm. And Intel has nothing. Intel's stock went up when they announced that they were done making 5G modems because they were just dumping money into this thing.
Is this like Intel's like fourth mobile failure?
Yeah.
How many times have they tried?
Yeah. And for a minute, you know, like having the iPhone modem business is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
They just literally couldn't get it right.
So, okay. Here's my
question.
Yeah.
Apple knew this yesterday. Apple knew this a month ago. Apple knew this a year ago. Mm-hmm. What happened that they got to the KFC argument and they're like, all right, we're out. We're settled. Like they had to know Intel was going to like pull out of the business.
Right.
Presumably Intel told them like, this isn't going great.
Well, some people are wondering like what happened first? Did this settlement happen? And then Intel's like, you know what? Phew, we're out. Or did Intel like tell Apple, hey, actually, this isn't going to work. You should probably figure something out. And then they settled. And then Intel announced.
Yeah, this sort of like this chain reaction of events. There's the first day of the trial. They settled just like they put out the press release. The press release is super terse.
Mm-hmm.
Qualcomm, obviously, like I don't know how to – you can't read into it too much because they won't say the number. But Apple signed a 6-year agreement to use Qualcomm chips with a 2-year option to renew. They signed a license agreement. So Qualcomm got what it wanted. They're selling chips and they got the license. And an unspecified one-time fee from Apple to Qualcomm, which presumably is all of the licensing fees they hadn't been paying already.
Yeah.
Right? So like Qualcomm won. The Apple press release has a longer laudatory passage about Qualcomm in it than about Apple. So you know, at the end of every press release, it's like Apple is the world's best company and you should only buy it. Like it's there. There's like two paragraphs of how Qualcomm invented everything at the end of this press release.
The finest purveyor of patent encumbered modem technology.
So they obviously like won running away. So what happened that Apple decided we're going to get through opening arguments of this trial and that's when we'll stop. And maybe that will always be a mystery. But
I have seen lawyer shows on CBS. Maybe they read the jury.
Yeah, that's like what everyone's saying. And it's like, well, then you should have tried harder than this KFC situation. Like, you thought you were going to win this trial at opening argument. And you're like, here's what it's like. It's like buying chicken. Who hasn't bought some chicken? Like, imagine you're Tim Cook, one of the richest company in the world. And you're like, I just want some chicken. Like, why did you think that would have been a good argument? And like, did you read the jury enough? Right. And Qualcomm's opening arguments were basically a sob story. Like, they took all this money away from us. Now our engineers are sleeping in the streets. You know, and we're just out here inventing the future. And big old bully Apple showed up. Like, maybe that. But if you're in a game where you're trying to get leverage and you think based on your opening arguments that you've lost enough leverage, you need to settle right then, like maybe your argument was never that good.
Yeah.
And so like that's to me is going to be the mystery forever is why do we get all the way here? The one comparison I have, which is one of my favorite Verge moments of all time, is Uber and Waymo went to trial over self-driving tech. You remember this?
Yeah.
The
dumpster diver?
Yeah. He like took his laptop. He downloaded all the files. Waymo, which is owned by Google, sued Uber. It was like a whole – I mean, this is like trade secret theft. It was like a whole thing. It was chaos.
Yeah.
And everyone thought Google would win running away. And Sarah Jong was at the trial covering for us, and she wrote, I think for day three or four, she wrote the headline, like, Waymo's case is pretty weak. And like there was like dead silence from like the Google PR people and the Google lawyers, and we're like, we probably pissed everybody off. And like 20 minutes later, announcement that they had settled. And I was like, we just made them settle. Like we just called them out and they settled. Like we're very proud of that moment. There wasn't any of that moment here, right? Like there wasn't any of that moment where like it was just like very obvious that one side was had a weak case. I don't know. Like to me, it's remarkable. It does cement Qualcomm's hold on this industry. And even if you think Apple's going to do the thing it's probably going to do, which is make its own modems, they're not going to license those modems out to anyone else.
Yeah.
Right. So everyone else is still enthralled to Qualcomm. It would have been a good thing for Intel to figure this out and become a component supplier to the industry because then you get competition.
No, Neelai, we're talking about. You're only allowed to have one big company in each industry.
There can only be six companies. And now Qualcomm can be half of them.
Well, it sounds like the hot thing to do in this industry is to design the spec and then be ahead on the tech for the spec. So Apple should design 6G with its brand new poached employees.
Well, sure. I mean, it's hired an awful lot of employees. A lot of those ex-Intel employees are apparently going to Apple.
Mm.
Presumably Apple thinks you're just going to like work harder. Because they'll be in a spaceship. They'll be like, this building's a circle. You should be able to figure it out now. But that's sort of the rumor is that they're all going over to the Apple side. Intel is just like generally struggling at an engineering level. So,
yeah.
Right. So like, who knows? Maybe it's all going to work out. But yeah, the game Qualcomm has played to perfection is forward investing in the spec, owning the huge swath of patents in the standard, and then leveraging that against the industry. And so, like, their version of this, the happy version, is, well, we invent all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we spent the money up front, and now we want it on the back end. And everyone else is kind of like, well, shit. that was basically Apple's response to them.
It's really frustrating. It's one thing, like a typical patent in a non-standardized industry, it's like, well, we don't need to make technology that's compatible with your patented technology, so we can go our own way, you know? But in this scenario where there's a standard and the standard is encumbered by patents, like it's probably way different. But I know there's been a long term work to get the browser's video playback not be completely just drenched in patents. And same with like image decode, you know, like it's because it really limits. I don't know. It's frustrating. Patents are garbage, is my opinion.
Mm.
Yeah,
but I just like, don't see how any consumers are benefiting. It's not like 5G wouldn't be worked on and invested in if there weren't these patents.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge argument around FRAND in general. Like, does this work? Is this how you want it to work? And sort of the arguments are, well, it works everywhere else, right? Like, we are not having this argument about Wi-Fi, which is also patent encumbered. We are not having this argument about Bluetooth, which is also patent encumbered. Like, there are... The this is so wonky, but like the FRAND methodology operates well around the world, and you just never see it. You never think about it, right? When Apple wants stuff, like FRAND is like thrown into question. Like Apple wants to sue Samsung, like all of a sudden Tim Cook is like, we need to reset how FRAND works. Apple is mad at Qualcomm. Like we're having this like patent discussion. Is Qualcomm's business model extremely aggressive? sure is. But like, how do you incentivize a bunch of companies to contribute their technology to a standard if they're not the ones who are going to get paid on the consumer end? Like, that's a that is as complicated of an economic question as I think there is. Would Qualcomm just do it because they think if they invent good enough stuff for the standard, their chips will be better? Well, that is true because Intel couldn't make them. But like, in a world where Samsung can just lift all that tech and make something equally as good, like, you probably want to get a return on that investment. So like, I don't know. Like, it's as complicated as anything. And there are places where there isn't a patent ecosystem like that, and there are lots and lots of places where there are. And it just seems to be like Apple sits in the center of it all the time. And they cast themselves as like the victims of an unfair system when they are also the richest company in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, we'll see. I just, the thing that kills me is it would have been better for everybody if Intel had sorted this out. Because then you would have had two competitive chips that were being sold as commodities instead of the Apple world and then the Qualcomm world, which is where we seem to be going. All right, that's enough patent talk for today. Mr. Miller.
Yeah.
Every week, you do a segment.
Always. It's called Keyboard in the Front Club Honorary Inductee Edition.
Okay.
So, as you all know, I am the president and CEO of the Keyboard in the Front Club.
Yeah.
Mostly inspired by the amazing Asus Zephyrus laptop, which has a keyboard in the front, right?
Touchpad in the back.
Touchpad to the side.
Touchpad to the side. Okay.
Hot laptop above the keyboard.
Yeah.
Does this make sense? So you don't have to lay your hands and wrists across hot laptop to touch a keyboard.
Yeah. Right.
Keyboard in the front club, especially for hot gaming laptops. Well, the new Acer Predator Helios 700 has a twist on this where the key, it's so hard to explain. The whole top of the laptop where the keyboard and trackpad are, right? It slides forward, revealing fans and innards of the laptop.
Ooh.
It slides forward and the touchpad like tilts down because now it's off the shelf of the laptop, right?
Right.
So you're bringing the keyboard towards the front, but it's not technically in the front because the trackpad, while I'm guessing not even functional anymore, is still technically still attached and in front of the keyboard.
But it's it's like in the winter when you've got like a giant sheet of ice on your roof and it like starts to slide off in one big piece, but doesn't quite completely fall off. Yes. And so like some of it's hanging off the eave.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's just slides
a very
out.
Good illustration. Yeah. And it becomes a nice like tapered wrist rest, so you can use your keyboard, which is now basically in the front of the laptop. Because obviously, if you're going to play a video game, you're going to plug in a mouse. So we have an honorary inductee in the keyboard in the front club, and I'm very excited. Welcome.
I like it. I can't wait for you to have just like 50 gaming laptops. That's what your home should look like. This is my wall of gaming laptops. All right. Let's talk about PS5 for 5 minutes. Wirehead a big piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that I don't put anything past Sony. Like, Sony can say anything that's insane, and I'll believe it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So at one point, they were talking about how it would have better audio, and there was a typo in the Wired piece.
Okay.
So the Sony person was saying, like, you know, we're going to have this better audio. It's going to be much more immersive. It's kind of sounded like they were going to add Atmos to the PS5 because the PS4 doesn't have it. But he's like, but it's only going to be headphones and visual surround sound. And I read it and I was like, visual surround? Like, what does that mean? And like, I like the rube I am, I just assume Sony's got something nuts.
Yeah.
Because you, of course, Sony is like, the future is visual.
Right. No. You were just hoping that it was DJ speakers. You were just hoping it was light up speakers. Visual. That's all you want.
No, it was a typo. They meant virtual surround sound.
Ooh. Reading this piece, it sounded like two middle schoolers. And like
imagining
one guy's
a
like,
game console.
Yeah. And it's like, what do you think the PS5 is going to be like? And like, well, let me tell you, it's going to be so good. It's going to have 8K. And well, what about the audio? Oh man, the audio is going to be so good. It's going to be 3D audio. You know,
like it was a lot, but they're doing ray tracing.
Yeah.
Which so far has not been anywhere except super high end. Like, I think we saw the first big ray tracing announcement CS. Mm. And then, like, the heart of this piece, and Paul, I'm interested where you're taking, because the whole world is moving to cloud stuff. And they're like, it's going to have an SSD.
Bum, bum, bum.
Oh, the SSD is huge. It's amazing. Okay. At some point in this piece, they say it's kind of vaguely worded. Like, this SSD is about 20 times faster than a regular SSD.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or it could be faster than the fastest. I don't know. My guess is that it's a like M.2, like an NVMe. It's not a SATA SSD. This is the impression I'm getting. So it's not just a good SSD that you get in your desktop. It's very fast, and that's very exciting. But yeah, it seems obvious. It's kind of RAM. Like,
yeah.
When you have a 100 gigabyte game, you're not going to put it all in RAM. So you need a secondary slow RAM. Yeah. That's what storage on a video game console is. The problem is you have these 100 gigabyte games, and the thing they don't mention is what capacity this SSD will be. And very fast SSDs are very expensive. So are you going to have a 128 gigabyte SSD that can only hold one game?
What if it's 128 gigabyte SSD and like most of it is designed for just pre-caching what they think you're going to need from the cloud? So it's like half streaming.
Maybe.
I don't know.
They said it would have physical media too. Yeah. So
here's the future I envision. Mm. People that live out of the country where they can't get good broadband because our broadband policy, all comes back to broadband policy, is garbage, and they have to have something fast and local. We'll get PS5s. And everybody else who can get good broadband in the cool hip cities are going to get Microsoft or Google Stadia. Because then instead of having like a cool PS5 under their thing, they'll have an amazing, more powerful machine in the cloud.
I don't think this Stadia machine is going to be that much powerful than this PS5.
Mm. Okay.
I mean, obviously it's the cloud. They could upgrade Stadia as soon as the PS5 launches. Also, they haven't launched Stadia yet. So who knows? But I'm not. Are you that bullish on Stadia? I'm not.
No, but Microsoft is like, you know, going to be taking another swing, and I'm talking like 3 years down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. Like we're not gonna bring 500 or gig speeds to all of America in the next 5 years. It's just not going to happen.
No.
Yeah.
But it is going to happen, and I do think that we're going to have high enough speeds and interesting enough like cloud gaming technologies where the latency will hit an acceptable level for all but the most hardcore gamers. That in 5 years, that is a reasonable thing to expect. And so all of a sudden we live in this like 5 year in the future world where like the only reason to buy a PlayStation is because you live in a place that can't get broadband.
Or they have better games than the Xbox, which has historically been the reason to buy a PlayStation. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's an interesting time for this piece to come out. That was like, there's the tech narrative. Like, what are they saying? Is it cool? 8K ray tracing, visual surround sound. Everybody's still on visual surround sound, to be true. But like, here's all these specs. It's going to have this SSD situation. And then there's like kind of like the media narrative, which is like, why now? Like, why put this out now? Like, what are you trying to prep people for? And it seems like the response is, I don't know, Microsoft just put an Xbox One S that is literally the same Xbox One S without an optical drive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Google announced Stadia and like, well, we got to have something. Let's just put some letters out there and see what people think.
Well, they are prepping people for not having any exciting Sony news at E3.
Yeah, that's probably true. I don't know. It's interesting. I'm asking the Virtcast audience, if you can come up with an idea for what visual surround sound is, please let me know. Because it was a really exciting like hour where I thought it was real and then they corrected the typo. All right.
We don't have time, but I just want to say I'm very happy that Google and Amazon have stopped having the stupidest fight in technology and are allowing YouTube on Fire TV and Amazon Prime Video to support Chromecast.
It was very dumb.
Okay. That's it.
It was just very dumb.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. The rest cast this week. Like I said, there's two folds. There's a Galaxy Fold and there's Apple Folding, and those are the two stories.
Wow.
Yeah, I did it.
Okay.
I made a funny, Dieter. All right. We're out. We're out of here. We'll see you next week. Tuesday's interview episode. Friday's chat show. You can tweet at us. I'm at Reckless. Dieter's at Backlon. Paul's future Paul. We want to hear from you. Just do all the stuff. Sign up to all our podcasts. Watch all our videos. Just go to our website as many times as you can in a single day. We love you forever. Rock and roll.
Snip, snip.
Paul.
Thanks to Canva for their support. Canva wants to make your presentations come as easy as those thoughts that pass through your head. And thanks to their AI, you can start with a simple prompt and watch Canva go to work. Choose your favorite style, customize the content, and you're done. It's a serious time saver. Whatever you do for work, Canva presentations can give you a head start on your deck. You can generate sales presentations, marketing decks, HR onboarding plans, you name it. Finish your deck faster. Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.